Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, to Creating a Family, talk about infertility and adoption. I'm Dawn Davenport, the director of Creating a Family, and we are a nonprofit providing education, resources, and support for infertility and adoption. You can find us at creatingafamily.org. Each week, I post a blog on a topic relevant to adoption or infertility, but this week, my blog is relevant to neither. It's simply my musings about the unexpected luxury of being snowbound for several days this past week. You can read it and share your own experience about being snowbound, or share your or brag about your lack of snow. At you can find the blog at creatingafamily.org/blog. I post regularly on Facebook and Twitter about infertility and adoption and life in general. On Twitter, you can find me at DawnDavenport1. And yes, indeed, our infertility and adoption Twitter lists continue to grow. We now have two lists for each infertility and for adoption, since we maxed out our first list on both of those topics. You can follow these lists as an easy way to follow and share tweets with others who are interested in these topics. It's kind of like a shortcut to Twitter. Again, I'm Dawn Davenport 1. I would also love to follow you and have you follow me on Facebook. On Facebook, I'm Dawn.Davenport1. You can join the Creating a Family Facebook support group as well. And the easiest way to find it is to type in Creating a Family in the Facebook search box, and we pop right up. We publish a video on our infertility and adoption video pages and on our YouTube channel every couple of weeks. A video you might find interesting is a practical guide to how to choose a surrogate. You can find all of our videos on either our adoption or our infertility video page or on our YouTube channel. As we approach year end, we know that you only have a few more weeks, actually a few more days, to make a charitable contribution. We hope you will consider making a donation to Creating a Family to help us to continue to provide the show, our videos, our websites, and all the resources we provide. You could give this donation as a gift to someone who cares about adoption or infertility or who cares about you. I will personally write them a note notifying them of your thoughtfulness. And, of course, your donations are tax deductible. To donate, go to any page of our website and click on the Donate button on the lower right-hand side, and we truly do appreciate your support. And speaking about support, this show, as well as all the resources provided by Creating a Family, could not happen without the generous support of our sponsors, including Beacon House Adoption, which is an adoption agency providing private domestic adoptions, as well as adoptions from Russia. They have an accredited program in Russia. We also have Children's Connection, Inc., and they are a licensed adoption agency with domestic adoption program and embryo adoption program, and they also provide post-adoption support for international adoptions as well as home study services in Texas for all types of adoptions. And I'm very pleased to announce a new sponsor to Creating a Family. We have the Atlanta Center for Reproductive Medicine, which is a full-service infertility clinic with IVF, donor egg freezing. They also have a reduced-fee IVF refund program and an IVF multi-cycle program, and they recently added nutritional counseling and also evening and weekend hours. They have offices throughout the Atlanta, Georgia metropolitan area. To get more information on any of these sponsors, click on their logo or name on the right-hand column of our site. And if you are looking for an infertility clinic or a donor or surrogacy agency, or if you're trying to choose an adoption agency, we now have a searchable database to help you select just the right one for you. You can search by location or services provided or years in operation or humanitarian aid, as well as a whole host of criteria that we think are important when choosing one of these service providers. These are agencies and professionals who have chosen to support us and allow us to continue to bring you this show and our other resources, and we hope you will consider supporting those who do support us. Today's show is going to be on using yoga, nutrition, and acupuncture to help you get pregnant. Our guest, Beth Heller, is a yoga teacher, a nutritionist, co-founder of Pulling Down the Moon Integrative Care for Fertility, and co-author of the very good book, Fully Fertile. And she's going to be discussing how to use the healing techniques such as yoga, nutrition, and acupuncture to enhance your fertility treatment. Welcome, Beth, to Creating a Family.
Hey, Dawn. Thanks for having me.
You know, I think it would help to start with a brief synopsis of how you became interested in infertility, you know, your own journey, so to speak.
Well, absolutely. I am a former fertility patient, as is my business partner, Tammy Quinn. And we met because we were both yoga teachers who had the germ of an idea to offer a yoga for fertility class in Chicago. Yoga was a big part of my journey. I was an amenorrheic athlete, stressed out graduate student when I first started thinking about having a baby. I was lucky enough to wander into a yoga class, and really it was a big epiphany moment for me. So over the course of my fertility journey, it didn't wind up there. It went through, you know, a lot of struggles trying to get pregnant, ultimately using medical intervention as well as the holistic techniques that really Pulling Down the Moon does. And then wanting to offer this class, offer a yoga for fertility class for women because it was so helpful for me, met Tammy. She had the exact same idea. And we put our heads together. We really wanted to bring this to the community. And it just went crazy from there. We started getting calls. It was, you know, can you offer a class in this suburb and that suburb? And do you know an acupuncturist or a nutritionist or somebody who really understands what I'm going through? I'm going through IVF. Is it safe for me to do X, Y, and Z while I'm doing these procedures? So really, yoga and holistics were just a deep part of my own journey as well as Tammy's as we created Pulling Down the Moon. And actually, we finally threw up our hands and said, let's just start a center where we can bring all of this together and really dig in and explore and develop and grow this community of holistic support for women who are trying to conceive.
You know, something you mentioned that I'm interested in, you say that you used both Western medical intervention as well as some of the Eastern and yoga and some of the Eastern medicines as well. What's the difference between the terms? We see a lot of terms kind of bandied about. We hear alternative care, complementary care, integrative care. What's the distinction between these terms, or is there none?
You know, I hope, Don, and I really believe that it's actually an evolution. When Tammy and I started, it was alternative medicine was really kind of the term in use for acupuncture, for yoga, for massage, for those kinds of techniques. Throughout the course, we've been doing this for almost 9 years now, complementary and alternative medicine became more of the term. And it was kind of complementary was something that you did along with your medical treatment. So it started as alternative and then it became complementary. And now what we're really seeing is integrative care for fertility, which, you know, something that we work with both Shady Oak Fertility in the DC metro area and Fertility of Illinois in Chicago to safely integrate holistic methods with medical treatment. That doesn't mean that you know, people can't use these things without medical intervention. And many, many women do. In fact, I actually recommend that women start with holistic methods if, you know, depending on age and how long they've been trying, that at a certain point it's prudent to get a medical checkup just to make sure that everything's working. So we really are trying to bring the best of both worlds. And I think that's hopefully where all medical treatment is going in our country and hopefully just in general to this idea of integration. We've got the best of the East, we've got the best of the West, and we all know what each other are doing so that we get better results.
You know, we're seeing on our infertility service provider database, our infertility clinic provider database, we have a list of services, and one of them is mind-body programs and as well as other specific complementary forms of alternative treatments. And we see more and more of both our providers, our infertility clinic sponsors, who have these programs, who have incorporated these programs because they see both that it works as well as that it is helpful for patients. Perhaps it's more because they think that that's what the patients want. But we also see that when our audience is choosing a clinic, they often are looking for a clinic that at least has this as an option that they might want to consider. So I think certainly that is, it's moving. Now, I have not seen any clinics that are particularly actively including yoga. Talk to me a bit about how yoga is effective, or is it effective, actually, in increasing fertility?
Well, there are so many reasons to believe that yoga is one of the most perfect exercises that you can do for fertility. And I say exercise. Yoga is so much more than just the postures, but I'll talk about the physical practice of yoga first. There is abundant data that shows that yoga can actually decrease levels of stress hormones in our body. And as controversial as the relationship between stress and fertility is, and the data goes back and forth as to whether stress causes infertility, but we know that fertility causes stress.
I was just going to say, it's a chicken and egg thing.
Right.
What we know for a fact is that
we know that, and we know
infertility
that
is one of the most stressful life experiences that you can go through. It ranks right up there with death of a spouse, divorce, and cancer. I mean, it's a big darn deal.
Yeah, absolutely. And we know that stress, no matter whether it's your fertility, it all can do. It can have a great impact on the quality of life, whether you're sleeping well, it can have an impact on disease, it can gain weight, it can make it difficult for you to lose weight. So we know that lowering stress is good for women who are going through fertility, bottom line. The other thing that yoga can do, you're using specific postures that target the pelvis, the low back, groin muscles, we can release tight fascia and we can actually allow blood to flow more freely through the body. And we can use poses that themselves target blood flow into the pelvis. And then the other interesting thing about yoga as opposed to something like running is that when we're practicing, when we're running, our body is shunting all of our blood to our skeletal muscles so that the big muscles can continue this repetitive, intense aerobic activity. The very different response that we get when we're doing yoga, where blood flow is much more distributed throughout the body. We call it, instead of the fight or flight response, which is the stress response, yoga stimulates this rest, nest, and digest response in our body. So you've got the lowering of stress, you've got blood flow. There's also there are many teachings of meditation and looking at our thoughts and how we are perceiving our world and how we're creating our world, and the deeper processes of yoga, the deep breathing, the meditation actually bring onto the table so that we're living this journey more consciously and less emotionally.
Are there specific postures or routines that should be used, or would just a general yoga practice have a fertility-enhancing effect?
You know, I always tell people who call, we get tons of calls at Pulling Down the Moon, where can I go? I don't have a fertility yoga class in my area. I always tell people that a gentle Hatha yoga class is a good place to start. Things to be aware of is there are, if you're doing a medicated fertility cycle, if you're stimulating your ovaries, you don't want to be doing intense folds and twists. You could tell your instructor what's going on with you before class, or you could tell them that you have some abdominal issues and ask them to give you posture modifications that would make sure that you're not doing too much deep work in the belly. So that's one way if you don't have access. There are also a lot of great yoga for fertility videos out there. The poses that we use at Pulling Down the Moon are really designed for opening up the hips, as I said, releasing the back and fascia and increasing the blood flow. So fertility yoga would be better than a regular Hatha yoga, but a regular Hatha yoga class is way better than no yoga at all.
Do you know of any Western medicine type research that shows that yoga can increase fertility? And I realize that it's not necessary to prove the efficacy of a spiritual and physical practice such as yoga, but I'm just curious.
You know, Alice Domar, Dr. Alice Domar at Boston IVF and head of the Domar Center, uses
she
yoga.
She has been a guest, by the way, and is going to be an upcoming
guest
in a couple of weeks, actually.
Yeah, she's absolutely wonderful. We're actually going to be working on integrative care centers across the country with Dr. Domar. Her research has shown that her 10-week mind-body program not only reduces stress, it's also associated with better pregnancy outcomes. And yoga is a component of that 10-week mind-body program. So that's the most specific data that's out there on yoga. We don't have anything more targeted. But as I said, there's a lot of clinical data just showing that the decrease in stress hormones. There was a fascinating study recently that showed that women who practice yoga regularly actually have a lower stress response to stress events than other women, which is really neat. It shows that the cumulative practice of yoga makes you much more resilient to stresses. And I always tell that to my students, that as you begin to practice this, you're kind of building your letting go muscle. You're building your ability to stay calm in the midst of the storm.
Yeah, and we will. I will ask this question to Dr. Domar. She'll be on in a few weeks. How often do you need to do your yoga practice for it to be effective at improving your fertility?
You know, any yoga is better than no yoga. A minimum, you know, between 2 and 3 times a week is ideal. Once a week is great, because one of the things that happens with yoga is it carries over into your outside life, your off-the-mat life. If you lay down at the end of a practice, if you do your shavasana, your resting pose at the end of practice, and you feel what it is like to be relaxed, you have much more awareness tomorrow when you're stressed. You can say, hey, I feel my heart racing. You become aware in a different way, and you can use breathing, you can use some of the techniques you used in class to get back to that place of relaxation. Ideally, 2 to 3 times a week would be fantastic. But I don't know, you know, a lot of women have busy lives.
Well, and as you point out, some of this can be done, you know, there's taking it in a yoga class, but there are also, your book, Fully Fertile, does a great job, I think, of laying out a yoga program. So it's not that you have to, it seems to me that it wouldn't be that you have to go someplace. You could also utilize one of the videos you mentioned or your book or something like that.
Absolutely. And the practices in Fully Fertile, we were very cognizant that women probably have about a half an hour to devote to their yoga practice. And so the practices that we provide can be done in under 30 minutes. So, yeah, there are a lot of resources, many more than when we first started out 8 years ago.
Oh, that's for sure, yes. Should your yoga practice change depending on what time in your cycle you are or what point in the fertility treatment cycle you're at?
You know, when, as I mentioned a little bit briefly, earlier, when you're doing ovarian stimulation, you might want to modify your posture so that you're not putting too much pressure on your belly. For instance, you're not going to want to do back bends on your belly if you're stimulating your ovaries or doing injectable drugs. Really, that's the major difference between in the points of the cycle and the major recommendation that we would make. Certainly, there's during menstruation, we're not going to be recommending that women do inverted poses. It's just traditionally taught that women avoid those things when they're bleeding, so we would make that recommendation. Generally, any pose that you can do while you're pregnant, this is a good rule of thumb, any pose that you can do when you're pregnant is one that you could do at any point of the fertility cycle. Now, if somebody comes to me and they've just had their period, they're taking some time off, there are some deeper twists and folds and things that we can do when they're not stimulating their ovaries, but those are things that I would recommend that they work with somebody who really knows what they're doing to explore.
I don't know of a single person who doesn't wonder if there isn't something, anything really, that they can do during the 2-week window in an in vitro fertilization cycle after the embryo has been transferred and is hopefully implanting into the woman's uterine lining. Is there any type of yoga posture that is suggested for this 2-week waiting period?
You know, any sort of gentle, and doctors are going, you have to talk to your doctor and get their input and then find your comfort level. Moon, our yoga practice is safe throughout the full process. We just have women make it a little bit easy during the 2-week wait. Some women who are feeling less comfortable with that, we will have them do restorative yoga poses where they're just simply supported by bolsters and straps or legs up the wall. On our website, on our blog, there are a couple of different documentaries that show supportive restorative yoga poses, and those are perfect for any time, if you're just feeling stressed out or if you're during the 2-week wait.
Now, you suffered from a miscarriage and from a stillbirth. But before you ended up conceiving your 2 sons, how does yoga fit into the miscarriage picture?
Well, You know, miscarriage is one of the most, any kind of loss, and I'll put even a failed IVF into this. It is one of the most devastating things, particularly for women who are very used to doing the work and getting the reward. For
yeah.
me, getting back on the yoga mat and coming to a place where I could stretch my... I didn't realize how I had held the physical experience of my miscarriage in my body. And I think a lot of my students would say the same thing about an IVF cycle. We're tightened up around the places where we did those injections, or we remember the cramping pain, or, you know, not to get too graphic, but coming back to my mat and being able to breathe and stretch and open again was absolutely critical for being able to move forward. So, yoga teaches that we can hold emotional scars in our body, and that stretching and breathing and mindfulness can help relieve those scars. So I recommend yoga as a healing technique for those experiencing the loss.
You are listening to Creating a Family, talk about infertility and adoption. Today we're talking about using yoga, nutrition, and acupuncture to help you get pregnant. Our guest, Beth Heller, is a yoga teacher, a nutritionist, co-founder of Pulling Down the Moon Integrative Care for Fertility, and co-author of the book Fully Fertile. And I must say, I really enjoyed it was a well-done book, Fully Fertile is.
Thank you so much. Just telling someone today that I really felt that book just wrote itself, because there are so many stories and so much experience of literally the thousands of women that have come through here over the years that it was a joy. So I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Well, let's talk a bit about nutrition. You're a nutritionist, and we all know about the importance of nutrition during pregnancy. But what about nutrition to enhance your chances of getting pregnant? And I mean beyond the basic nutrition to sustain a somewhat healthy body. Can you talk a bit, and then what I'd like you to do, you have 7 steps to a diet to enhance fertility. And what I'd like for you to do, we don't have time. You'll have to buy the book to read all of the details, and it's quite detailed. But could you hit upon the basics, the basic 7 steps that you recommend?
Absolutely. A lot of women, I think it's very true that most women that come to Pulling Down the Moon are already eating a very good diet. From the outside perspective, unfortunately, there is some kind of general, I don't know what you would call it, just conventional wisdom about low-fat diets and diet sodas and eating lots of salads, and that these kind of low-fat diets might be the best way to maintain weight. And for many women, they are maintaining their weight, but they're omitting foods that can really be beneficial for fertility. So one of the major shifts that we ask women to do, or that we recommend women do, is to just look at their diet and just kind of go through this checklist of the choices that they're making. Are they eating a low-fat diet? I can't say this enough. A low-fat diet is not the right diet for fertility. We don't want to go the other way and eat a high-fat diet that's filled with saturated fats. But making choices from healthy fats, fats like omega-3 fats from fish and from different oils, can make a big difference in our body's ability to synthesize hormones. They are integrated into our cells' membranes. They are part and parcel of our body's inflammation response. And it's really, really important for women to be getting sources of these omega-3 fatty acids in their diet through nuts, through fish. Of course, when we're trying to conceive, we have to be careful about what kinds of fish and how much fish we eat. We recommend that women take an omega-3 fish oil supplement, just because more and more, and this is very interesting, there's a whole new line of research looking at the role of inflammation in a woman's ability to conceive. So that would be the first thing. So getting off the low-fat diet and really including healthy fats in the diet for all of those reasons.
You've mentioned specifically omega-3 fats. What about the monounsaturated fats, or the olive oils and things such as that?
Yes. Absolutely. Your olive oil, your monounsaturateds. Just getting more of the omega-3s, less of the corn oils. The omega-6s are ubiquitous. You can't turn around without bumping into one. I think you really have to make an effort to get some of the healthier fats into the diet.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that. Certainly, most processed foods have plenty of the corn oils in there, right? Okay. So that was one of the seven steps. What would be another one?
Another one would be to make sure that the carbohydrates that are coming in are from whole grain sources. Whole grains are a great source of B vitamins, which are very important for the ovulation and just effective hormone regulation in our body processes. And the overconsumption of simple sugars can impact our body's ability to manage insulin. It can also cause kind of peaks and valleys in our blood sugar, so that maybe we might be eating too many simple sugars and then getting really, really hungry after we crash from those and then having to have another meal. So it kind of throws off our ability to eat regular meals and to control our appetite. And then finally, again, simple sugars are associated with higher levels of inflammation. And if we're concerned about lowering inflammation in the body, getting away from the refined sugars is going to be a great way to start.
And when you talk about simple sugars, are you also including the white carbohydrates, the white bread?
Yeah, I'm including white carbs. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, yeah, that makes...
Getting your carbohydrates from whole grains, fruits, and vegetables.
Okay.
That's what we would recommend.
Okay. Okay, that's two of your seven.
I would go, if I had to pick, I don't know if we can get through all seven, but if I had to pick another one, it would be that I think is extremely important is trying to avoid pesticides, trying to choose organic fruits and vegetables and milk and meats that are raised without extra antibiotics. As I think every woman who's trying to conceive, because you can't avoid the headlines, a lot of the pesticides in our environment they're called endocrine mimicking compounds, and they can into our system and they act and look very much like some of our hormones, and that can just wreak havoc in not only our own reproductive function, but also potentially the function of our offspring. There's more and more research in the field of genetics that's showing that these chemicals that we're ingesting now may actually be impairing the fertility of our offspring. So really, I know it's expensive, so maybe educating yourself about what's called the dirty dozen, which are the top vegetables, fruits that have most pesticides, and then trying to learn more about some of the ones that have lower pesticides, like avocados and onions and sweet potatoes. Those are going to have less pesticides as compared to things like strawberries or cherries. So you can make better choices as to which fruits and vegetables you buy organic and which you can buy conventional. So you can make smarter choices as far as your food dollar.
Yeah, I'm a big believer in eating seasonally and locally when possible, and I'm by no means a fanatic since bananas and pineapples have been known to grace our table. But still, if I had to choose between organic and local, I will usually choose local. As a nutritionist, what's your take on this debate?
You know, I don't know about you, Don, but most of the local we have is organic, or at least providers. If you're talking about shopping at your local farmers market, many of those people are growing without pesticides, and I would generally ask them whether they are. A lot of us haven't been able to afford the organic certification. Just asking them how the chemicals that they're selling have been raised is an important question. You know, both traditional Chinese medicine and Ayurveda, which is the traditional medical science that is associated with yoga, teach the importance of eating locally and eating seasonally. So possible, absolutely. At least in my experience, I haven't run across too much local in my supermarket where they're selling conventional fruits and vegetables. You might be luckier than I am that you actually have that choice here. It's able foods with local and organic, or it is our local farmers market.
Well, our local farmers market has a lot of people who, as you point out, do not have the organic certification, but many of them do use pesticides. Now, I may be kidding myself, but I, when talking with them, I believe that they probably use fewer pesticides than the agribusinesses that are often the suppliers of the grocery store. But I'm honestly not sure about that. I sometimes wonder if I don't hear what I want to hear when I'm talking with them. So, no, I do think that it's certainly a lot of the what's in the farmers market, is, at least where I'm at, is not organic. We had a question on last week's show from a woman who is a vegan, and she wondered if that had any impact on her infertility. You know, obviously being a vegan alone isn't a cause for infertility, since plenty of vegans have children. But do you have any thoughts on how a vegan diet or a vegetarian diet, and this woman was a vegan, not a vegetarian, or in addition to being a vegetarian, might affect someone who is, say, subfertile?
You know, I don't want to upset vegans out there because I also really honor that path of not eating meat, the path of non-harming, for all the different ethical reasons that people take that path. But I will tell you, Don, that at the Moon, we do encourage our women who are trying to get pregnant to include at least some fish or eggs or meat in their diet. And this is largely from Chinese medicine and even from Ayurveda. You wouldn't think this because when we think of yoga, we think of vegetarianism. But in yoga, there's also the teaching that householders, that people that are in the thick of things, having children, really out there working hard, need more sustenance and need to have some meat in their diet. So, you know, one of my recommendations to a woman who is vegan and is throwing up their hands and saying, why on earth am I not getting pregnant? I would explore adding some animal protein back into the diet. And I, you know, there are ways to do that mindfully and gratefully and not choose cruelty-free raised animals, all of those things. So, you know, it's a controversial topic, but that's what we believe here at Pulling Down the Moon.
Are there any foods you should necessarily avoid during any part of either your natural cycle if you're trying to get pregnant without treatment, or your IVF or IUI cycle if you're in fertility treatment? And specific foods that you should be avoiding during this time?
Apart from alcohol, caffeine, simple sugars, the things that are just kind of the no-brainers for cutting out, at the Moon, we advise women to avoid excessive intake of soy foods and phytoestrogens like flaxseed. Those can be pretty powerful in the way that they work in our body, and they may or may not. There isn't definitive clinical research out there. But with some of the research that's happened over the years, that has come out over the years, we just advise women to stay away from those things when they're going through ART or when they're trying to conceive.
What about dairy?
Oh, dairy. Dairy is so controversial.
Yes, it is. That's why I'm asking you.
I know. You know, interestingly, we all know the Jorge Chavarro study out of Harvard, the nurses study, that showed that full-fat dairy was found to be beneficial or protective against ovulation disorder, so ovulatory disorder, infertility. Now, at the Moon, we definitely recommend that women cut back on low-fat dairy, definitely, because when women are drinking skim milk, and some of the researchers that are really deep and involved in this whole debate are concerned about levels of growth hormones in the milk, and particularly when we're drinking skim milk, levels of those substances are getting higher. Women love cheese, so certain things that they really love that are dairy, and we'll work with them to include those in the diet. However, if a woman is having any sort of GI issues, if they're having diarrhea, cramping, difficulty digesting, if they're bloating, if they're having skin troubles or migraines, we will actually do an elimination diet where we take dairy and we also take gluten and soy and eggs and some of the other common allergens out of the diet, and then very carefully add them back in while we're assessing symptoms and how the woman is feeling. Now, that's something that I really don't recommend that women do on their own. It's something that really needs to be done with a dietitian, with very close monitoring to make sure that we're not. We also don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. We don't want to take you off every yummy thing in the world if it's not impacting you. But we do want to get to the heart of what might be causing some of the GI problems, and an elimination diet is one way to do that.
Yeah, I was very glad to see in the book Fully Fertile that you addressed the issue of sleep. You know, it's one of those catch-22s. A lot of times, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, fertility is stressful. Stress impacts sleep. And the minute you start worrying about the fact that you've got to get sleep and, oh, this is hurting you, the lack of sleep is hurting you, then it makes it even harder to get into a natural sleep. So there's a bit of a catch-22 here. But I so believe, from everything I'm reading, just for general health, that getting enough sleep is vital. And as I say that, I would be one of the first to admit that I'm guilty of not always practicing what I preach. But nonetheless, since I'm preaching here and not practicing, let me just say I do think it's important. Let's talk just a little bit about the importance of sleep to enhance fertility.
Well, a lot of women don't realize this, a lot of people don't realize this, that one of the first physiological responses to inadequate sleep is that our stress hormones start to creep up. And as we know, that's just not good for health, and there's some evidence to show that that might directly be not good for fertility. So getting adequate sleep is one way to help control the levels of stress hormones. Body. There's also some really interesting research that was done with flight attendants looking at women who had wacky schedules and how they just had a much, much, much higher rates of ovulatory disorders than women who had regular sleeping schedules. And that's all related to the pituitary and the pineal gland and some of our endocrine glands. And everything is so, our body is such a fine, intricate system that when one thing starts to get slightly out of whack, it can nudge other things out of whack. So really, for women to find out how much, to really get honest and look at how much sleep they're getting, look at their sleep habits, and make a New Year's resolution, good time of year to do that, to get enough sleep, 8 hours, really. It's not something our moms made up.
Well, and to get 8 hours sleep means getting on a schedule that gives you, it doesn't mean, you know, laying your head down immediately and expecting to fall asleep within 1 minute and then waking up 8 hours later. You may need to start that process a couple of hours before the 8 hour sleep period where you're winding down, you're de-stressing, you're reading a book, you're avoiding your computer, you're doing all the things that are conducive to slowing your body down and working with their circadian rhythms and things. So, yeah, you take it one step further and suggest keeping a dream journal. Now, why is knowing your dreams important for upping the odds of getting pregnant?
Well, one of the things that we always laugh about here at the Moon is we're very science-based. What we do, we make sure that we have evidence, you know, that we work as much with what there is clinical evidence for as possible, but also there is a deeply spiritual and mystical side of pulling down the moon and yoga and a lot of these different techniques that we do use, and it's taught in yoga and in many different traditions that our dreams can actually help surface our real feelings about things. And so many women, at least I, speaking for myself and many of my students, are on such a treadmill with the fertility journey that they have lost touch with what they even want. They may have, you know, I many times speak to a woman that says, I absolutely don't want to adopt. I can't, I don't want donor, you know, I don't want to talk about donor eggs. I can't think of them. I don't even consider that. And not, but from a place of emotionality, and I totally respect that. I respect anybody's choice and whatever journey they, whatever path they want to take. But opening up to our dreams, and again, this comes back to yoga. It also comes back to meditation and getting away from that emotional place and really understanding authentically what we want. And dreams can tell us a lot. That's for sure. We'll all ask at the beginning of our yoga classes, did anybody have anything interesting that came up in conversation, a dream, or, you know, a meditation this week? And you would be surprised at how much deep insight arises. So maybe you wouldn't be done. You sound like somebody who could really get down and talk about dream symbols.
Well, I find it fascinating. And I certainly think that a lot of our working out of thoughts and issues takes place in our dreams. So I can certainly see the benefit of trying to maintain touch with it. If for any reason, trying to bring the unconscious to the conscious so that you're integrating it all, so you know where you're ending up, or at least know that you're working on certain issues.
Yeah, that's one of the...
Go ahead.
Am I losing? I'm sorry, John. Can you hear me?
Well, you were cutting in and out. We've been trying to figure out on our end here what to do about it, and it's on your end. You are cutting in and out. Short of having you hang up and call back is the only thing that we've been able to figure out, and we've decided that it wasn't probably worth doing that. I don't know what the problem is, but you are cutting in and out a bit. Yes.
I apologize. Yes, we're in an old, beautiful loft building, and I'm wondering if there's something going on.
I don't know. It may make sense if you would like to call back in using a – we normally don't want people calling into the switchboard with a cell phone, but it might work better if you could call back in. I don't know. We could keep trying. Is the reception poor on your end as well?
We're cutting in and out, but you know what? It's a little bit better over the last moment, so let's just go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to talk a little bit about acupuncture. Now, you aren't an acupuncturist or an oriental medicine practitioner, but both through your work with Integrative Care for Fertility and your book, Fully Fertile, you are knowledgeable about acupuncture's use for and oriental medicine's use for enhancing fertility. Now, let me, since I've twice now had to go back and correct myself, let's make a distinction between what I'm talking about when I say oriental medicine practitioner and an acupuncturist. Is there any distinction?
Oriental medicine is a broad umbrella term for many different techniques that fall under this system of medicine. So oriental medicine will include forms of massage. It'll include oriental medicine diet. Therapy. It includes acupuncture, which is actually the place of needles according to different energy points on the body. It includes things like moxa. Are people who are trained to be acupuncturists in the world who do not have full training in oriental medicine. You'll see this sometimes with some of the medical community chiropractors may go and do a shorter term education on just the acupuncture piece, whereas somebody who practices oriental medicine or is a doctor of oriental medicine has this much broader scope of practice. So there is the difference. Acupuncture is a tool that is used by an oriental medicine practitioner, but just because somebody is using acupuncture does not mean that they're fully trained in the whole scope of oriental medicine. So that's a really important question to ask.
Well, and I also think that an oriental medicine practitioner often will use many things in addition to acupuncture. It's not just they will use herbs and oriental medicines and things as well as acupuncture for a, not to overuse the term integrative, but for a more integrative approach. Now, is there a specific acupuncture protocol that can be used with every woman or man, actually, to increase his or her fertility?
You know, that's not how acupuncture works. There is, actually, just to back up a little bit, the reason that acupuncture for fertility really hit the consciousness of the infertile women, or women that were struggling with infertility, was there was a study that was conducted in Germany that actually looked at women who were going through IVF and decided that they would give one group acupuncture and one group not getting acupuncture. And what they found was really interesting. They found that the women who did get acupuncture had almost double the success rates of the women who did not. Women who did not had 26% success rate, and the women who did get acupuncture had 43%. So a lot of women have heard about that. That's called the German protocol. That protocol is still in use. There have been many studies that have tried to replicate that. What is interesting about the German protocol, which is one set protocol that's used on every woman, is that's really not even how acupuncture is meant to work. Acupuncture is customized and consistent and done over many weeks of treatment. And each week, the practitioner is addressing where the patient is in their cycle, where they are in many different physical conditions, and addressing their treatment to that moment in time. In addition, they may use some specific standard protocols. Before and after embryo transfer, they would use the German protocol, which is just the two-session treatment. If a woman is having issues with uterine lining, they would use the Swedish protocol. But if you're working with a highly trained acupuncturist or Chinese medicine practitioner who is trained with fertility, they're going to be doing a set standard protocol with you every week. They're going to be changing. It's going to be shifting. They're going to be doing pulse tongue diagnosis, doing an intake, doing an interview to make sure each session they're treating the imbalances that the patient is presenting at that moment in time.
Well, you talk about the research. I think that's one of the things that would be interesting to talk about, because a lot has happened in the last year or two with research on acupuncture for fertility. Could you just kind of generally summarize some of that most recent, or just maybe the whole universe of research? It's all over the board, actually, but...
Well, as I mentioned before, the first study, kind of the seminal study, was the German protocol study, which found that acupuncture before and after embryo treatment increased the odds of a woman, increased pregnancy success rates. There have also been multiple studies that look at uterine lining and the use of acupuncture. Acupuncture has been shown to improve the uterine lining. There is some interesting data about the way that acupuncture interacts with cortisol levels and other prostaglandins throughout the uterine, in the uterine environment, throughout the menstrual cycle, that are associated with better pregnancy outcomes or actually a more fertile environment. So there is a lot of research, and it's ongoing, as you know, as we speak, that's looking at acupuncture and fertility. The thing that we really haven't had yet is the study that we recommend at the moment, which is 12 weeks of consistent acupuncture with a very personalized diagnosis and treatment plan, and looking at that with outcomes, pregnancy outcomes, both with and without assisted reproduction techniques.
Well, there was some,
so we're waiting for that study.
Yeah, and that's been one of the frustrating things. And there was some a much anticipated study that was coming out of Boston, Harvard, I believe, or Boston IVF. I'm not exactly sure now that I'm trying to remember it, where it was a very rigorous study, double-blind protocol, and they did not find the improved pregnancy outcome. It was with IVF treatment. Are you familiar with that one?
I am. They did find that women who went through treatment had better, I think they felt more optimistic and more
right.
relaxed. They did not find an increase in pregnancy rates.
Right. And that was quite frankly, it was a surprise, at least it was for me, and I think for a number of people. And not to make excuses, but one of the things that's frustrating is using a Western standard of research on an Eastern practice. And by that, I think from my perspective of somebody who reads research a lot and tries to understand it, not as a practitioner of any of these things, they had a specific, in order to control all the variables, they chose to use a very specific protocol where they used the same points and had the acupuncture needles at the same period of time, same points. This is how I understood the study anyway. I would like to get your input in case I'm wrong. But that isn't inherently how acupuncture is supposed to be done. Acupuncture needs to be individualized because not all people need exactly the same thing, because we all don't present in the same way. And yet, to make it fit, to make the research fit the Western standards of the scientific method we all learned, control all the variables except for one, then they had to control the variable of what type of acupuncture, or they felt like they had to. And they did not find that it increased pregnancy rates, although I think it did from the individual woman's perspective, it might have been a better experience. But from the pregnancy outcome, it didn't, and yet many people in who use acupuncture for fertility believe that one of the reasons that they did not find any is because they were using a set protocol. So you're right. What we haven't seen, and I don't know, because I've talked with researchers who say that they can't devise a study that would allow for the individuality and still pass the rigors of Western. Yeah, go ahead.
I said it's simply a different paradigm, and we find that in almost any of the non-Western approaches, which is that everybody is different, and we would treat every patient differently. We would never have a standard protocol for anything, which is why I won't say that there are 10 yoga poses that are going to work for every woman, because every woman that comes to me is going to have a different, they're going to have different issues in their body, they're going to have different energetics. So the same thing with the acupuncture, that the paradigm, the Western research paradigm, just doesn't fit this kind of approach. Mm-hmm. Which is highly tailored and very specific and actually shifts in direction from even week to week depending on what a person presents with. So you're absolutely right, Don. That is, you know, I'm hoping that we'll crack this nut and be able to find a research paradigm that actually adequately represents what some of these integrative techniques are able to do.
Yeah, I hope as well. Now, what type of credentials should someone look for in an Oriental medical doctor?
You would look for somebody who has a master's in Oriental medicine, at least. I would also want to do a full interview of that person, asking what sort of education they've done specifically for fertility. I would talk to them about how long they've been in practice, obviously, if they can answer my specific questions about what kind of medicine. So if I say I'm using Lupron, know exactly what I mean. I think that's one of the number one things that will be a clue whether you're talking to somebody who just hung up their shingle and said they treat fertility or somebody who actually really knows their stuff about fertility.
We have a question from Dana. She says, we have been trying to conceive for 6 months. I am 34. I realize that is not a long time, but I am starting to do some research. Your site and show has become my obsession. Thank you so much for the education Creating a Family has provided me. I have a question for today's show. Does it make sense to go to an acupuncturist for a general fertility checkup? Will they be able to tell if there is anything wrong? My regular gynecologist says there is nothing to be worried about and that we should just track ovulation and continue to do the baby dance. Can an acupuncturist do a general assessment of my fertility and chances of getting pregnant?
No. For that, I recommend that you go and see a reproductive endocrinologist. For somebody who has been trying for multiple months, it really makes sense to make sure that your tubes are open, to make sure that your partner's sperm are swimming, and make sure that all of the things that need to be there and working well are working well. And that's one of the things at Pulling Down the Moon that we really, really stress is go at least get a fertility workup. And then you know, then your acupuncturist can work on your balance and help your body, help work with any symptoms or other hormone imbalances that you might be experiencing the symptoms of, but your doctor is going to be the one that can actually tell you and just say, yep, everything's working, keep trying. Or they'll say, no, you know, look, your tubes are blocked on the left side, or gosh, you know, we're noticing that some of your blood levels of your hormones are off. So I think it really helps to have that objective information. In fact, I think it's imperative.
Well, you know, and it seems to me, though, it wouldn't hurt to do both. I would certainly agree with that you would seek both the Western end, particularly as you point out, it could be that your husband has no sperm, or it could be something that's they can tell that you are in premature ovarian failure. Mm-hmm. But also perhaps going to an oriental medicine practitioner more for a general overall checkup, not specific to your fertility.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, going to an oriental medicine practitioner is going to help you address all the aspects of your life, and from that system, every element of your life, from what you eat to how your digestion's working, that's all interrelated with fertility. I think if a woman's goal is to specifically get pregnant, though, it's very helpful, and I would say imperative, that you just make sure that the machinery's working, and that information
right.
is actually really, really helpful then mm-hmm. for your practitioner. And I think that you could potentially get much more out of the work that you're doing with your practitioner if they have some of that objective information. I mean, a lot of times, in fact, almost all the time, our practitioners will be looking at labs, looking at results, looking at those sorts of things, and integrating those into the treatment that they're giving their patients.
And I love this question we got from Stephanie. She says, my question is on the mind-body connection once you are pregnant. As many of us have learned, while getting pregnant can be a challenge on its own. The whole goal is to stay pregnant and have a healthy baby. What are some things people can do once they are pregnant to help ensure that this happens? Is it the same techniques for getting pregnant, or are there other things that can be done?
I think that having a good basis for learning how to relax, having a yoga practice that can grow with you through your pregnancy, through prenatal yoga, obviously eating right, all of those things are really, really important during pregnancy. Of course, during pregnancy, in your prenatal classes, there will often be visualizations and meditations that you do about your baby, where you're taking this mind-body connection and you're taking it that one step further to connect with that life that's growing within you. It's really fascinating. A lot of the epigenetics research that's coming out that's showing that a mom's stress level during pregnancy actually impacts her offspring's ability to cope with stress. So it's more than just how comfortable we are. We are setting our future children's threshold for stress by the kind of stress that we have during our pregnancies. So that's really fascinating. In fact, it kind of raises the responsibility level a little. So it's a great question from Stephanie.
So the same things, basically, you know, a yoga practice, because there are specific postures that can be done for pregnancy, eating healthy, probably the same basic things you're talking about for getting healthy fats, eating whole grains, avoiding pesticides, all of the same things would probably be effective both post-pregnancy as well as or during pregnancy, post-pregnancy too, as well as pre-pregnancy.
Absolutely. And also, I just wanted to add that at Pulling Down the Moon, we recommend that once a woman gets a positive beta, particularly if she's had a risk of miscarriage, but just generally is good advice to continue with acupuncture once a week throughout the first trimester. And then, in general, our women continue to meet with their practitioner once a month throughout pregnancy and then step it up towards labor and delivery time. Like almost any condition that you can think of, Chinese medicine has a very extensive teaching for and treatment pattern for that condition. So the women, and then we also recommend that the women come in postpartum, because that's really the time when all that self-care kind of goes away and it's all the focus is mm-hmm. on baby, and that's when that mind-body connection and that support would be really useful for moms. So I would add acupuncture in there to what you can do while you're pregnant and beyond.
Thank you so much, Beth Heller, for being our guest today on Creating a Family. To get more information on Beth or on Pulling Down the Moon or on the book Fully Fertile, you can go to their website, pullingdownthemoon.com, and you can buy the book there. You can get more information about their practice as well. If you have found this show helpful, please post about it and link to it so others can listen as well. It's going to be archived on the 2010 Big List at the radio page of creatingafamily.org, and it's also available for a download as a podcast from iTunes. You can find it at the iTunes store, but the easiest way is to just click on the iTunes button on our radio page, and it will take you directly to the page on iTunes where you can download it for free. To stay in touch with the latest developments in infertility, adoption, and as well as receiving the upcoming week's blog and show topic, please sign up for our weekly newsletter at creatingafamily.org. Thank you for joining us today, and I will see you next week.